Welcome to Ear Biscuits. I'm Link.
And I'm Rhett. It's time for another conversation with somebody interesting from the internet. And this week, the person that's joining us at the round table of dim lighting is Dane Bodigheimer, known to
dimmed lighting.
Known to fans as Dane Bo, known to us as Dane. He's the creator of probably the largest or most successful crossover series of all time, moving from the internet to TV. You may have heard of it. It's called The Annoying Orange.
That's right. It's an orange with a mouth superimposed on it. Well, Dane's mouth superimposed on it.
Right.
As well as Dane's eyes superimposed on it. I think technically it's one of his eyes superimposed twice.
It's the same eye,
yeah,
doubled.
Which may be part of the key to the success, along with, well, all the other factors, which we talked to Dane about. It premiered as a one-off video in October 2009 and now has over 152 million views. I'm talking about just that first episode of The Annoying Orange.
Here's a clip.
Hey, Apple.
What?
You look fruity.
Yeah, that was hilarious.
Hey, Apple.
What?
Can you do 10 push-ups in 10 seconds?
What kind of question is that? I don't even have arms. How am I going to do one push-up?
Hey!
What?
Hey, Apple.
What?
Can you do this?
No.
Try it.
No, stop it.
Okay, with that initial success of that video, Dane got the bright idea to start a channel that was wholly devoted to The Annoying Orange. It's called Real Annoying Orange. That was a good decision because that channel has since racked up 2 billion, that's billion with the B, that's like almost a third of the world's population views.
And in 2012, Cartoon Network picked up the series and adapted it for television with Dane still running the behind-the-scenes production operation, The High Fructose Adventures of Annoying Orange.
He's orange, he has a lot of friends, they live together on a fruit stand, they have adventures all across the land, and even play in a rock and roll band.
Since then, that television show has had 2 seasons, 60 episodes, but Dane hasn't stopped on the internet. He's still cranking out weekly episodes of The Annoying Orange.
And also making videos on his own channel,
Dane
Bo.
Yeah, he's still got at least two active YouTube channels with a lot of content.
We had a great conversation with Dane. He's got a lot of interesting life experiences that he shared with us, one of which was how to deal with inappropriate pictures while working at a one-hour photo lab.
It's touch and go with that. Also, how he worked in the middle of nowhere, North Dakota, where he grew up, and then his move to Bakersfield, California, where he found meth heads rolling around in his front lawn. Quite a shock.
It's never happened to me.
No.
But I'm glad it happened to him so he could tell us about it. And obviously, we talked about the many creative iterations that eventually led to creating the internet and TV phenomenon that is The Annoying Orange. So here it is, our Ear Biscuit with Dane.
I watched that the video you did where you listen to yourself on delay, and I
speech
tried
jammer.
It. Oh
speech
my
jammer.
God! Yes.
Do you fall victim to it?
Oh yeah.
Because there are some people who don't.
Really?
You know, we on the Mythical show,
we have the Fine Brothers.
The Fine Brothers were on there, and neither one of them are susceptible to it. Like they had no problem at all. Whereas we get on there and it's just,
hi, I'm the trying to talk, but I'm not able to.
Yep, that's totally what it is.
So you try this in like your spare time?
Well, what happens is we do every Monday morning, we have a Google Hangout with my whole crew because some of the guys work remotely. And for whatever reason, you know, sometimes...
Like video hangout.
Yeah, video hangout. But for whatever reason, there's, you know, feedback.
Yeah.
And then you're talking and you can hear yourself talking. And then pretty soon you're like, I can't hear what... Okay, now I can talk. You know,
yeah,
you
take right, the headphones off.
Yep. So.
Yeah, I mean, there's... I don't know what it says about the Fine Brothers, but there's something about the... You just letting go. And just talking and knowing when you're not, you sound like a complete idiot.
Yeah, I'm the worst when it comes to that. So yeah.
Now, going to your studio, I think I said this when we were there and we were doing our guest spot for The Annoying Orange.
Mm-hmm.
It was kind of like a dream come true. It was like a field trip. Like you watch this show. And you can, your friends are getting to go on the field trip. When do I get to go on the field trip? And it's like, and what is it going to be like when I get there? Are there going to be paddle boats?
Yeah.
Because the best field trip we went on in grade school was to Pullen Park, and there were paddle boats.
And that was the only disappointment, I got to say, that you didn't have paddle boats. Yeah.
That's next on the list.
But it was a very cool experience being guest on Annoying Orange, especially because we got to be rappers.
Yeah. Yep. You get to be the rapping fries. Chris Cut and Cut Chris.
Yep.
Well, and, you know, I had made assumptions about how the process would work or whatever. Mm-hmm. The one thing that I had not thought of was how still our heads had to be.
Right. Yeah, so you sit us down in the stool. You sit Rhett down in the stool first. I'm like, let Rhett go first, because if this is going to hurt, I want to know. I didn't know.
Yep, you can see how it goes.
So you sit down in the stool, and I think you told him to put his head back. If you want to put your head back, you can. But it was basically, I saw you set up the camera, just film his mouth.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, you've got this down to a science.
Right.
By this point. I mean,
it's been 5 years.
Has this staying? Because the first thing that happened was I sat down and I wanted to move my mouth to express myself, especially when
Your whole head.
Yeah, move your whole head when you're adopting a character. Has this affected the way that you communicate in life? Do you find yourself like keeping your head still now?
Like not, when you're talking not consciously. To your... I bet you, I have to wonder, actually. I mean, if somebody, you know, if they did a study of me, like, you know, starting 5 years ago to now, because I can't tell.
A head motion study.
You did?
No, I'm just saying if they did, it would be a head motion study, and you could be able to track... Now your head moves. I can tell your head's not moving that much when you're talking.
You might be right, actually.
Well, I was going to say that I think his head is moving a normal amount.
It is.
I think you got normal head movement while talking.
Right. It's kind of funny because you learn how to keep your head extremely still and emote as much as possible, but still move the rest of your body, like using your hand to gesture, things like that when you're, you know, saying something angry, like, I hate this very much, but you can keep your whole body very still.
What character is that?
That was my dad.
Really?
That was my father.
No, I'm just kidding.
So, you know, I feel like it was a success. I haven't seen our Chris Cut, Chris Cross guest yet. It hasn't come out yet as of this taping.
Mm-hmm.
But it was a grand experience.
Oh, yeah.
And you said 5 years of getting this thing down to a science. I want to thank you for the experience. It was like paddle boating.
Paddle boating. Yeah.
You guys were naturals. You know, like, there's a lot of people, and no disrespect to anyone that comes in and sits down, because it's a little, I don't know, it's hard to sit down in a chair, and then you've got these lights shining at you. They're like 2 feet away, and you've got a giant camera in your face, and somebody's saying, you know, keep your head completely still, don't move at all.
Right.
But be excited and say your lines with a lot of emotion. It's hard to do it all, and a lot of people come in and get a little freaked out, and so they're very kind of timid, and they don't, you know, really get into the character. Mm. But you guys came in, sat down, and rocked it out, so.
It was fun.
Now, you've had some high-profile guests on that thing. I mean, from the start, you've always incorporated YouTubers, but you've had some mainstream celebrities in there, too, over time, right?
So, back in the day, I got a cold call email, and... this company wanted James Caan to be on the show to help promote whatever they were trying to promote. And so I got to go to his house and meet him. And it was just me with a camera, sat down, filmed him.
You're like, I'm just going to, he knew you're just going to film my mouth.
Right. Yep. I mean, he kind of knew what was going on, but at the same time, really didn't. It was a lot of fun, actually. He was a really, you know, gregarious guy. He just told a lot of really weird stories, and he would go off on tangents in the middle of a line. It was, you know, he really yeah, it was fun.
Could he keep his head still?
Yeah, he actually did a really good job.
He was a good head stiller.
Yes.
And what part did he play?
He played jalapeno.
Okay.
Very sexy jalapeno.
was Justine one of the first guests, or?
Yeah. Yeah, she was the first guest. Before that, it was
like Bob Jens, was he helping you out at the time?
No, Bobby wasn't really helping. I mean, he was one of my buddies, you know, good friend at that time, and he was kind of watching this whole thing grow. But he was actually in the same episode that Justine was in, so that was the first episode with other people,
right?
So, well, let's go back to the beginning of you before we go back to the beginning of Orange. So where did you grow up?
North Dakota.
Wow. Oh, there's people there.
There is. All of like 20. No.
What was the situation?
The situation was it's a little town right outside of Fargo, North Dakota, called Harwood. Growing up, I was, in college, I was known as the Harwood Hustler because I hustled the hard streets of Harwood.
With like playing pool or what?
Nothing.
Selling drugs?
No.
Just because it started with an H.
Exactly. It had alliteration. Cool. So.
Yeah, right.
Because you were compensating for something. I don't know what.
I put faces on food. What can I say?
The movie Fargo, how do you deal with that when you grow up so close to Fargo?
It's funny. You know, that was what I love that movie, by the way, but many people from that area do not. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, people will ask them, oh, have you seen the movie Fargo? Oh, we don't sound like that. And they absolutely do. Everyone has that accent back there. Uh-huh. Oh, we're going to the bar. You know, that accent. Yeah, it's and people don't think that they have it.
What did your parents do there?
Well, my mom
was a pregnant sheriff or whatever.
I wish. Well, my dad was a roofer. My mom worked all kinds of different jobs. She, you know, would work like factory jobs. She worked a lot of night shift kind of things. But right now she works with developmentally disabled. Excuse me, I can't talk.
Oh, she's a true hero. Then.
Yes. My dad's not around anymore.
Okay.
He passed a few years ago. But my mom's still around. My brother's back there still. He's going to school. So
now you were doing an impression of your dad earlier.
Yes.
Was that this is how he talked?
Yeah, when he was angry. Yeah.
Did he get angry at you occasionally?
Yeah, he got angry at all of us.
You and you have a brother.
Yeah.
Luke, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then who else is in the family?
That's it.
Okay.
Me, my brother, my mom.
Okay.
Dad, yeah.
Two brothers.
In the immediate family anyways. I got tons of cousins and aunts and uncles and all kinds of things.
I mean, so what do you do in North Dakota for fun as a kid?
Nothing. There's not much to do. And that was the whole thing. Like, you know, obviously you hang out with your friends, get in trouble, go tip cows, that kind of thing. No.
That's not possible. We've tried it.
Yeah. Yeah, we have.
No, I'm joking.
We're from another north.
No, but we have tried it. So, I mean, that's what we did for fun in North Carolina. Attempt to.
Yeah, there's just, you know, that was the thing. There wasn't a ton to do, so you just kind of had to use your imagination. And one of the things, you know, when I was 12, my parents got a camcorder for the family. And as soon as they got that camera, I hijacked it and it became mine. And I used it to make all sorts of, you know, short videos with my brother.
Was this thing full VHS or mini VHS?
It was 8mm.
Oh.
Like a... What is it? Super? No, it's not Super 8. It's a
digital 8.
Yeah,
digital 8.
Digital 8. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yep. So the smaller tape based thing, but you could digitize the footage.
Yep. Exactly.
You weren't editing on VCRs.
I was in the beginning. Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, digital 8 came out afterwards.
Like high 8.
Yeah.
That's what you're talking about.
Yeah, it's high 8. Yep. Yeah, that's what.
Yeah, because digital 8 was a little too recent. Yeah.
Yep. Exactly.
So you would shoot. You would make shorts, but would you edit in camera? Like
yes.
Shoot this scene, and then the next scene is this. So I got to shoot it now. So that it can be laid on the tape right after the...
Yep, exactly. But it was obviously never a perfect science because there was like a 1 or 2 second delay from when you click the record button. So you'd have to, you know, say action, but then tell the person, don't say your line until 2 seconds after I hit record.
Right, because I'm not going to edit this. That's happening right now.
Exactly. So you get a lot of cutoff lines. You get a lot of people like standing there for a second and then moving and saying their line.
So you immediately started... doing scripted content with the camcorder.
Yep. And then, you know, playing around, we had a VCR in one room and then a VCR in another room. And so I grabbed those, put them together, and then, you know, tape to tape.
Take out those gaps.
Yeah, exactly. Put in some sound effects even.
Oh, wow.
I had what was it? It was a tape player that I hooked the RCA cables up to the back of the VCR, and then I could put fart sounds and stuff in the videos. So.
And so when you did that...
So these are fart movies?
No, when you do that...
What kind
that,
of movies do you think I made?
Because this is how I remember editing you know, mm-hmm. Link and I would shoot something, and then I would take the VHS-C tape, I would put it inside the VHS holder,
yep.
Put it in the VCR. I would go to my dad's office at the law school, and I would take two, like, VCR carts that they used in classes and put them side by side, and then take the cables from Radio Shack and, mm-hmm. and do the editing. But I don't remember being able to run, like, to overdub audio at the same time. Or
you eventually figured it out, and I said, this is good. That was my role. I was like, good job.
But didn't we have to do it all? You had to do it all at the same time,
yes,
right?
Yes, exactly.
So it's like while you were recording video,
yep.
You had that was
from one tape to the other tape.
You were sitting there ready with the tape player, and then you would hit the in hope to God that the fart sound came in at the
right
same time. Yeah, exactly. So there was a lot of hit and miss. So
it's so amazing that that was a thing that happened.
Mm-hmm.
And it all depends on how old you are.
Yep. Well, in fairness, the fart sound, there's a little leeway with when the fart comes.
Sure.
Like if you lean and then it's a few seconds before the fart comes, well, that's the normal.
Yeah, we've all had
but
that.
But if it sometimes comes immediately, that's also normal.
The
unless
science
you're actually,
of farts.
If you're filming the butthole, then you've got to be very precise.
I never did that.
What kind of movies were you making?
Fart movies, the same
fart
as you,
movies, yes.
Right?
Have you, now, I assume you're a fan of Dumb and Dumber.
Yes.
Knowing you.
Yes.
What does that mean?
And well, because you just said, have you seen the new trailer?
It looks amazing.
Well, the trailer, I laughed out loud.
He
names the cat butthole, and he says, why do you call him that? And he holds up and shows the cat's butthole.
Yeah. Yes, I've seen the trailer, right?
So, I mean, I'll watch that today. So, they do show cat butthole. And he has to say it like that, butthole.
And it's in a trailer. A trailer is, you know, anybody can see that.
Yeah, right.
So that's, yeah.
So, right. I mean, you know.
The world is changing,
it's
guys.
Different.
So how did you go from fart movies to making The Annoying Orange? I'm sure you can answer that in two sentences. Take as much time as you need.
So I went from making fart movies to, you know, just I kept making them. And
were there screenings?
No. I mean, there was for my family. That was the whole thing. Like, I loved making videos with, like, all my cousins and stuff, and then we'd all crowd in a big room and watch them together and
you remember
laugh
being
and...
particularly proud of anyone?
Oh, man. So I made this series called Demon Shadow, and it was about this demon. Like, it was a ritual for us. Like, every 4th of July, my family would come out, and we'd all get together for a 4th of July gathering. But at the same time, we would film one of these demon shadows.
Because you had a large cast.
Yes, exactly. And they were completely nonsensical. I grew up on horror movies and comedies pretty much, so those were my inspiration. Very, very cheesy. But it was just about this demon that would haunt us, and every year it would come back to life. It's kind of like Freddy Krueger. There's just, he can't be stopped. And it would, you know, we would in the end defeat him, and then he'd come back the next year. So this became a ritual, and I always just loved doing it, and the kids loved doing it. That became.
So would you like kill off a cousin every year or something? Like you can come back next year, but you can't be in the movie because you died.
Well, no, they
got to
kill Demon Shadow.
Well,
right?
But Demon Shadow's got to kill cousins first.
Oh, yeah.
Well, there's always, you know, there's always the danger of that. But no, none of the cousins ever got killed. One of our buddies got killed in one of them and then became a zombie who came back to life and saved us.
And did any of these people fart, or was that you got rid of that?
This was post-fart movie.
Okay, good for you.
So and I moved on.
How do you kill a Demon Shadow?
Oh, you can do it many ways. Very often it was with fireworks, since it was 4th of July.
Yeah.
So we would
you
get a big...
use the props at your disposal.
I think we did that at least 3 or 4 times. It became a reoccurring thing. It was like, okay,
production value. We're
going to do this ending again. All right.
What are the fireworks laws in North Dakota? Because I assume there's none. I assume like there's cannons.
It's pretty much no holds barred. But for whatever reason, a few years back, they banned bottle rockets. You can fire off the most insane artillery shell explosion. It doesn't matter, but you can't have bottle rockets
because you can hold them.
Yeah, apparently
kids
I'm
just
sure
hold them.
Yeah, too many
they
kids.
Look, they just look like it's like that stick looks like a handle.
It does. It does. It is
irresistible.
It is, isn't it?
Irresistible.
Yeah, we had many a bottle rocket fight. So yes.
So is it like, I'm going to film school?
No. In fact, it was, you know, me just kind of doing this thing. And then, you know, I got to the age of, I don't know, 15, 16, where I was like, oh, okay, I can get a job now to get extra money. So I started off working this really, you know, it was fun, but I would never do anything like it again. We worked out in these cornfields, and we were, it was like cross-pollinating different corn stalks.
You would sex corn.
Yes, exactly. With itself, which is a little disturbing. But yeah, anyways, that was a job for a couple summers. But then I saw in the paper one, you know, it was the next summer, that they were looking for a cameraman for the local Prairie Public Television or PBS.
Okay.
That's what Prairie Public Television is.
Prairie Public Television. Okay.
That's what it's called back in Fargo.
Right.
But I saw an ad for that, and I was like, "Wow, okay, maybe I'll give it a shot."
That's better than mating corn.
Exactly. So I applied, and I got the job.
Oh, wow.
And it was awesome. It was so much fun. Didn't get paid very much, but you got all the free Mountain Dew and popcorn you wanted. So at the ripe age of 16, I was like, heck yeah.
16 years old. Yeah. You were like traveling around the state shooting like public television stuff, or
it was all studio based. Like, they would do the, you know, every season they do the drives to raise money, and we would just shoot those,
film people answering phones.
Exactly. Which sounds boring, but it was so much fun, because you got your cans on, and you're just, you know, you're jabbing with the other guys and making fun of each other, making fun of the people answering the phones, which is terrible, but
if you do
that job, you can't think that nobody's, you know, making some jokes. So.
Did that lead to the next thing?
Kind of, yeah. It was when I was there that, you know, I was talking to one of the other girls who worked there, and she said, oh, you do film, and, you know, you really like this stuff. You should go to Minnesota State, at the time it was called Morehead State University, which borders Fargo. And they have they had the beginnings of a film department. Hmm. And that was when it first hit me. I was like, holy crap, I could actually do this for a living. All right. I like this. So that's, you know, I kind of left there with that in mind. And I made a meeting with the, the head over there. And, you know, he was awesome, said, you know, talked me into it basically, but he didn't really have to. He just gave me the spiel. I was like, you sold me at, hey, how you doing?
Right.
And that's, you know, kind of where it started. Went to film school there. And
what was the film program like? And you say it, you started to say Minnesota State. Is that what it's called now?
Yeah, it's called Minnesota State University of Morehead.
Okay.
Yes.
And you know, how many students in the film program?
Man, you know, in our kind of cohort, it was like, I think like 16, something like that. It wasn't a ton. So now it's much, much bigger. Over the last few years, it's really grown. But, you know, when I was there, we had one 16-millimeter camera. Nobody knew how to operate it. We had this guy that wasn't even affiliated with the school that would come in and help us run it, but nobody knew how to run it. It
didn't matter anyway.
No,
it didn't. Retrospect.
It really didn't. No, it didn't. I know at the time we were all like, oh, I wish we knew we could do that too, because it would be really helpful. No. It doesn't matter.
So was there like Demon Shadow, the college years, or?
Oh, I wish. I kept making them in my own time.
Really?
You know? Yeah. That was my thing, you know. Like,
do you still have Demon Shadow on tape?
I do. I've always wanted to upload them to YouTube, but I'm a little hesitant because they all have like copyrighted music. So I figured maybe I'll just put them up and not, you know, obviously not monetize them.
Or you just need to create the channel Demon Shadow.
Yeah.
And then just, you know.
Yep.
Just take whatever happens.
Right.
Well, if we get done with this podcast and people are like, we want to see Demon Shadow, all right, then I'll do it.
All right, okay, that's going to happen.
So, at Dane Bowe on Twitter, hashtag Demon Shadow.
My cousins will be very happy.
They'll be like, oh man, I've always wanted to be featured. But not quite in that way. Yeah. I didn't know they were going to bring out Demon Shadow.
So you were getting the proper schooling, but you had the thing that was even more important, and that was a drive to create.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah, and that, it was funny, you know, a couple of my good buddies, we would always say, like, you know, we saw some of the other guys in the department, and again, nothing against anybody else, but they would, you know, just do the required projects, and that was it. Whereas, like, I would do the required projects, and I would get done with them, and I'm like, I want to do more. So I would go out and do my own stuff. And I just, you know, for whatever reason, just constantly wanted to keep learning new things. Got a computer. One of the very first iMacs that came out. You know those colored ones? They came in all the different. Yeah. So I got one of those so I could use iMovie, which is the most amazing thing in the world to me.
I didn't even know it was called iMovie. So iMovie shipped with the first one of those awful looking things that was in public libraries.
Awful. What?
Well, now.
Beautiful.
I mean, at the time, it was like, wow.
It was a thing of beauty at the time.
Yeah, it was
amazing. It was like, what? This isn't a computer. This is a lunchbox. You know, it just was amazing.
With a tube in it. With like a television tube that you could see in the back.
Yeah,
right.
Yep, exactly. Yeah, so I saved up my money from doing those other jobs, bought a computer, and, you know, just I did, while I was in college, I did a internship at a claymation film. Or this guy, I think he was in Grand Forks, which was like probably 45 minutes away. Out in his farm, way out in the middle of nowhere, was making this claymation movie.
Really?
And he wanted someone to help him. And my, you know, the head of the department came to me and was like, hey, this guy wants help. You like animation, so you want to do it? I was like, heck yeah, I'll do it. So I went out there every day, drove out there, there and back, and just helped this guy. And he I can't remember his name. I think it was Peter, but I can't remember his last name. But he's the one that kind of showed me After Effects for the first time and kind of how to use it in a very general fashion. Like, nothing really in-depth, but it was at that point that I was like, oh my gosh.
What were his characters? Were they raisins?
They were knights. It was like a knight's tale. I think that was actually the name of it. But it's
since been taken by someone else.
Yeah. Something like that.
Turn into a movie. Yeah.
So that's kind of where I got my first, you know, dip my hand in the water, my toes in the water with After Effects. And that just, you know, from there I was like, I love this so much. And
there were still probably about, we're talking at least 4 more years before the advent of YouTube.
Mm-hmm.
Even from this point.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. So what was in that 4 years? Did you get married?
No. I met my wife to be in college, and we from there, you know, graduated, moved to Minneapolis. She's an archaeologist, so she was working for some of the firms in.
Teresa's an archaeologist?
Yeah.
How come I didn't know this?
Now you do.
Well, I mean,
can you call her? Because we'd like for her to replace you at this point. What could it? How could that have been? You guys have
skipped right over that.
But two very fascinating careers. That's interesting.
Yeah, she specializes in stone tools, so she can take. She knows how to flint knap, so she can take rocks and she hits them with other rocks and turns them into.
Does she like travel to remote locations and dig stone tools up?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
See, I've only ever seen this on television.
Mm-hmm.
Or movies, and I thought that it might be a completely made-up profession.
No.
But now it's been confirmed. I know one.
Yes.
She doesn't look like Harrison Ford, does she? No, I've seen her.
I told her when she gets her PhD, she's getting a fedora and a whip. There's no, she doesn't get to talk. Yeah, there's no.
Or you'll let her take it out in public.
Yeah, exactly.
So you moved for her archaeologist job.
She got a job out there, and then I wanted to go out there too because Minneapolis, there's a bit more going on as far as filmmaking. So I was like, maybe I can break into something, but man, I had no luck. There's not, at the time, there really wasn't a lot going out there, and I did everything. Like, I was shameless. I would just show up at businesses with a resume in hand and say, hey, I'm looking for work. You got anything? And I ended up getting a couple of things, but they didn't pay at all, but I got to stand there in the cold and help out a little bit, but that was about it.
And what kind of stuff was that?
Wrangling talent.
Okay.
I think it was a commercial shoot, and then I can't even remember what the other one was, but it was something similar. So it wasn't anything crazy. It was just like a one-day shoot. Got to do it a couple times. In the meantime, I worked at 1 Hour Photo Labs. That was my thing.
Wow! So you've seen photos.
Oh yes,
it's like archaeology of a different kind.
It kind
really.
Of is actually, especially when you know because people 1 Hour Photo Labs. There's just stacks and stacks of photos, and people bring stuff in, but then you know they just don't come back for it. So you'll have packages there for years, and peeling those open, and you know like looking inside. It's yeah. It's crazy. You see some crazy stuff.
If people take photos of things that are like inappropriate, you're not supposed to develop those.
No. No. In fact, I mean, we ended up, it's one of those things where you can't really stop it from being developed because you develop the whole roll at a time.
You just have to keep it.
But you
it.
Don't put it in the...
Right,
right. You don't put it in the pack.
Yep.
Why not?
You put it on the wall in the office.
Exactly.
That wall.
The procedure was too, like it was mandatory that when that happened, you had to actually tell the person, like, hey... We found some naughty photos in there, and we couldn't put them in. And of course,
but they were developed. That's what I don't get. And what were the categories that you couldn't put in there? Are you talking nudity?
Yeah, I mean that was
like illegal activity. I get that. But,
sure,
but why personal photo nudity?
It's North Dakota.
I think that maybe it isn't anymore. And of course, I don't know who's taking these type of photos and getting them developed these days, but
right.
I think that was like the law. But it does raise a great question, because the person who took them has seen it.
Right.
Now the person who developed them has seen it.
Yeah.
Who are we trying to protect at this point?
Yeah, I shouldn't say it's just North Dakota. It's everywhere. I mean,
right. I remember in North Carolina too. But you would have to tell the person, hey, that photo that you took, I don't know if that's your girlfriend or if that's your mom.
That's an uncomfortable scenario to like have to say to someone, like, oh, we found some nudies, so...
And what do people say? Are they like, oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's either one of two scenarios. The first is like, they're like, you know, kind of get that bashful look on their face and like, oh, okay, sorry. Or it's like, what? What? That's my photo. It's... You printed it, right? And then you have to say like, well, yeah, but we can't give it to you. Well, just give it to me. So
it's just crazy. It is crazy.
It is.
Man.
So do you have any on you?
Yeah, let me see your wallet.
You will never see my wallet.
So you and Teresa, you were dating or you were married?
Yeah, we were dating. Yeah.
Okay, so she's like being archaeologist extraordinaire,
mm-hmm.
and you're like trying to piece it together.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, was that frustrating? You're like, oh, she's not going to marry me if I don't get out of this photo lab.
No, there was really no worry about that. I mean, neither of us were really in any rush to get married or anything like that. But it was frustrating at the same time, of course, you know, to really be hungry for it and want it. But not, at the same time, kind of not knowing what you want, but just being hungry for it, you know? Because, mm-hmm. like, I didn't know at the time, like, do I want to do animation? Do I want to direct? Do I want to do this? I mean, at the end of the day, all I kept thinking in the back of my brain is, you know, I want to direct movies. That's all I want to do.
So where was the breakthrough?
I don't know. Well, I guess it was YouTube, really. That was the big breakthrough. From Minneapolis, Teresa got into a master's program in Bakersfield, California.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Baco. Right on our back doorstep here. Yeah. Drive an hour and a half, you
Oil
get to
fields.
Bakersfield.
The meth capital of the world.
Birthplace of Merle Haggard.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Exactly. So we ended up moving there.
It's a great introduction to California.
It is. It is.
Lots of cows and dust and meth, I guess he would say.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
It's funny. The first day that we moved in, because we didn't get a chance to actually come out and find a place before we moved out. So we got our place online, moved out, get there with our moving truck, pull up, and we're like, oh God, this is sketchy. We start moving our stuff.
What did it look like?
For lack of a better word, very ghetto-y.
Like, you mean, like, unsafe? Like,
yes, yes.
Okay.
A lot of unsavory types hanging out. Mm-hmm. Guys rolling around on lawns, obviously, on something. There was a guy that was there. He would roll around on the lawn and chase cars.
You mean like as if he were on fire? Like a person, at first I thought you meant like driving a car on lawns, but you mean
no.
Like bodily like rolling,
rolling.
Yeah, on grass.
Like, yeah. like a log.
Right. A log that snorts and yells.
And anyway, wow. Chase cars like a dog.
Yeah.
So, roll like a log, chase cars like a dog.
It rhymes. There you go. Uh-huh. So yeah, we were moving our boxes in and, you know, getting settled, and all of a sudden we hear from the walls were just paper thin. So in the apartment next to us, we hear, "F you." And then I was like, okay. And then we hear, "Whoa, f you." And we're like, okay. And it starts to escalate.
Oh, so no. That was a woman and a man.
Yes. Yeah. "F you. No, f you. Oh, you want it? You want it?" And then you start hearing this.
Oh, wow.
And Teresa and I were like, what?
Welcome to Bakersfield.
That was our first introduction to Bakersfield.
But for a moment, you thought there was going to be like gunfire through the wall?
Well, that was always a worry, actually. It sounds, you know, completely overdramatic, but it was a worry. When we moved away from that place, it was the very next week we were watching the news, and somebody got arrested for pulling a gun at that apartment complex at the pool, and they were trying to shoot somebody, but the gun
wouldn't go off.
It wouldn't go off. It got jammed, and we were like, so we actually broke our lease after 3 months because we couldn't take it.
Right,
it was so you got bad. Out. Yeah, for whatever reason, we made the people next to us really angry because we'd complain about the noise because she's in school trying to do her studies. Meanwhile, people are blasting their music, and so we would complain. I came home one day, went inside, came back out, dude pissed on the wheel of my car. It was like, because they were, you know, they were tired of us.
"We got to get that archaeologist and her husband out of here."
Think about it.
There's an archaeologist next door.
I didn't expect to go down this road, but it was a weird situation.
Wow, I mean, that's pretty hardcore, peeing on a tire.
Well, you know.
Does that mean he now owns the car?
Well, yeah, he's marking his territory. Yeah, do I do at that point?
You have to pee on all four tires, and then you own
it. Oh,
yeah. It's like, glad you drove away when you did.
Quick, get in the car.
He's on number three.
Yeah, if you can make it to the spare, you definitely get it.
So you got out of the apartment. Did you get out of Bakersfield? Or?
Yeah, eventually. Eventually we did. One of the reasons I moved to Bakersfield, besides the fact that Teresa got into a master's program, was I was able to get a job on Pimp My Ride thanks to a couple buddies that I went to college with.
Really?
Yeah.
And they, shoot up there in Bakersfield?
They actually shoot it in L.A. in Inglewood. So I would commute from Bakersfield to Inglewood. Probably twice a week, but I would stay with them during the week. They were gracious enough to let me crash on the couch.
And what was your job there?
Production assistant.
Okay.
Sweeping floors at first.
So you were in the studio. You weren't like on location with exhibit like, "Hey, I'm here at this car and I'm about to pimp it." You were back at the studio hearing footage of him say, "Hey, I'm at this car. I'm going to pee on all four wheels."
It was kind of in the middle, actually. I didn't work. I mostly did not work at MTV Studios. What I did was I worked at the garage where they would do all the work.
That's the best part.
Me and my buddy Spencer, who actually is like been with me from the beginning with Orange. It was me and him. That's what we did, man. We hung out at the garage all day long.
Where they were literally pimping the rides.
Exactly. It was pimpage 24/7, baby.
Did you pick up any body work or skills?
You know, surprisingly, no. It was terrifying. The first day you walk in, because these are rough and tough dudes that work there. But, you know, it's standard procedure that you gotta rough up the new guy a little bit. Give him a good ribbing. So everybody was, you know, like guys would, I would ask guys questions and they'd just look at me, whatever. And they'd turn around and walk away. And then I'd see them way off in the distance. They'd be like, you know, talking to their buddies and they'd just be laughing and laughing and laughing. I was like, ah, man. So in the beginning, it was scary, and I remember my first week, I hated it. I was like, everyone hates me, you know, whatever. But then after a little bit, it's totally one of those things, like, you know, you're around them enough, they start talking to you. Pretty soon, everybody gets along, and they're awesome dudes. It was a lot of fun, actually, to be down in the garage with these guys, just tiny, skinny white guy amongst
okay
all these rough and tough guys.
And so did YouTube start to bubble up at this point, or was it?
It was.
Did you move to other jobs?
It was close. So it was right around that time, I think, towards the end of when I was working on Pimp My Ride, that YouTube started to become a thing. I remember sitting in. We had a trailer out back. I remember sitting in the trailer making a MySpace page, and it wasn't too long after that.
And when did you and Teresa get married?
2 years ago.
Okay, so that was more recent.
Yeah.
Okay.
We had been together for 10 years.
Okay.
Almost 10 years. Yeah.
You guys have been together a decade.
Yeah.
Okay, so as you began to work on Pimp My Ride,
making that MySpace page,
what was the thought at that time? Because the traditional model, still a lot of people who follow this, it's like, oh, I'm going to get a job as a PA on a TV show. I'm going to work my way up to whatever, and then I'm going to be in the business.
Yep.
Was that the strategy at the time?
Kind of. Yeah. I mean, that was. Me and my buddies and everybody that was on the show, that was kind of the way that things were done. If you were in that position, you just got to work your way up. And I kind of did, from PA, I was able to actually parlay that and work on a creative team with a little help from Spencer. Actually, he helped me get a position on a creative team where I got to actually shoot and do some writing, write some of the bits on the show, things like that. So that was a lot of fun. But, at the end of the day, things didn't quite work out. And after I was done with it, it kind of left a bad taste in my mouth, because I was just like, this isn't quite what I want to be doing. It just doesn't feel right. So I was like, I don't think I want to do TV. But while I was working at Pimp My Ride and we were, working our butts off, we would come home at night and we would just make stupid videos like we'd always done back in college and whatever. And it began with we made our own website called gagfilms.com. where we were just uploading our stuff there. And it was a lot of like old college buddies that would just go on the site and leave comments and watch it and stuff like that. And that was kind of our vision, was like, hey, what if we created this site where everybody could put videos, and then it wasn't shortly too long after that, that YouTube popped out of nowhere.
So you almost made YouTube.
Almost. Yeah, just that close.
I should have called it GagTube. I don't know what that would have been.
There is a GagTube.
It sounds like it might not be.
You don't want to go there.
Yeah. I actually had a lot of people ask me when I said, oh, we have the site, gagfilms.com. I'm like, oh, is that porn? what do you guys do? Yarn Van Nuys.
Right.
Did somebody steal a video from gagfilms.com and put it on YouTube, or did you post it on YouTube yourself?
No, I think we just, we made a YouTube page and just started uploading stuff there.
Because ironically, our first video on YouTube was stolen from our website where we were hosting our QuickTime videos.
Mm-hmm.
We had a parody of Pimp My Ride.
Really?
With our kids, called Pimp My Stroller.
Mm-hmm. Oh my gosh. How have I never seen this?
We built, because it used, it's not online.
Copyrighted music, and it was taken down.
Oh.
But we pimped out a double stroller. We actually engineered this thing. It kind of looked like the Batmobile, and we put my daughter Lily and his son Locke in it, and we like, play these characters. We were making fun of Pimp My Ride.
Yeah.
It was like, yo, we pimped out your stroller, and then
it was crazy. It had spinning rims and ground effects and everything.
That's
and
awesome.
And we like did the voices of our kids and like.
But somebody
stole it and put it on YouTube.
Well, but when we moved from North Carolina, that pimped out stroller, double stroller, is out there somewhere.
We auctioned it off. Somebody bought it 3.5 years ago.
Really?
To a fan.
Wow.
Who came to our studio. So that video was taken from our website, posted on YouTube, mm-hmm. and it got a lot of views. So we're like, we should start a YouTube channel.
Were you guys doing the same exact thing? Like, hey, let's make a site and put some videos on it. Yeah,
it was called retinlink.com.
We weren't smart enough to think, let's get other people to put videos up there. But but it's funny because, just because we're similar in age and had the same type of aspirations, it's funny how there's so many parallels. It's like, if you wanted to be in some sort of entertainment that involved you making videos, you edited on two VCRs, you shot with a certain type of camera,
yep.
then you started your own website, then YouTube came along, and either you were smart enough to put your videos up there, or in our case, somebody put them up there for you. And so when you put them up there, on YouTube was this early days, I guess, 2006. Is that when it, right, yeah, right when it started, basically?
Yep.
What were some of the first videos that you put up?
The first videos were stuff that I did back in college. The very first video that I have on my Danebo channel, which is my main channel, is a short called The Yanni Show. And it's like a kid's show / game show starring Yanni. And he teaches about green light touches and red light touches. And
it
goes south very quickly. And needless to say, I have gotten many hate comments from people that love Yanni that I am a horrible person. For whatever reason, back in college, we loved, you know, poking fun at Yanni. I don't know. The guy didn't do anything to us.
Well,
but
he was an easy target. He was Yanni.
I saw him on PBS the other night, and I was like, this is unbelievable. Yanni live. Like, he's still doing his thing.
Still at it.
Yep.
So then what popped? Because I know before Orange, mm-hmm. there were talking eggs.
Yes.
Yep.
That was probably the first thing that popped.
We introduced those eggs.
I remember this very
on the
well.
CW. Online Nation.
Yep.
I don't know what the intro was. I'm sure it was a really cheesy line that had been written for us. It's like, you know what, Link? I'm in the mood for eggs. Oh yeah, Rhett?
An omelet?
Well, here you go. How about some eggs with personality?
Really? You know, like, roll the clip.
I'm sure it was something that bad.
Yep, I remember this very, very well.
So that was on YouTube. It was, you open the fridge.
Yep.
And the eggs.
That was like one of my, the very first talking food video that I did.
What happens? You open the fridge.
Yep, open the fridge, and there's some unsuspecting, very cute, kind of slightly annoying eggs that are, you know, kind of bewildered and like, what is going on? And then they get taken out of the fridge and put on the counter, and the whole time they're like, I don't know what's going on. What's happening? And, you know, you see the frying pan get put on the stove, and the burner goes on, and the whole time they're still talking, what's going on? And then all of a sudden, Steve gets grabbed, and he gets cracked over the edge of the frying pan, and everybody freaks out. Yep, it's always Steve. I don't know why, but it's always Steve.
And so it started with eggs, mm-hmm. and then moved on to what?
Well, it started off with eggs because I did that video for a film contest. It was Bolt.com. It was this old kind of networking sites, kind of like MySpace. It's now defunct. It's not around anymore. But at the time, they were doing this contest where, you know, you make a minute-long video, submit it. If you win, you get $5,000. So I did it. And I actually won, and I used that $5,000 to buy a new camera and some new equipment, and, mm-hmm. you know.
But why talking eggs?
It's a great question. I mean, it's one of those things, like, you know, I always grew up, you know, anthropomorphizing things. Mm-hmm. We all do as kids, you know, you make the rocks talk or whatever, sticks, trees, you know, you give them personalities. And, you know, learning After Effects early on, and realizing that I could actually do that in my videos just blew my mind. And that's why I just totally gravitated towards that. Like, okay, I can bring anything to life now.
It's amazing literally. To think that stop motion guy that you drove ever how far every day
yep.
to help him out for presumably nothing.
Right.
Taught you After Effects, and that changed everything.
It totally changed everything. Yep. So that was, yeah, that's definitely so one of those moments.
You won $5,000 and you bought a better camera.
Yeah, so DVX-100.
Oh, yeah.
You guys had one of those?
A or B? Oh, yeah. You an A?
I had a B.
Okay, we had an A.
We had
an A,
and then we had a B.
Nice.
So,
wow.
Did you just put eyes and mouths on things after the eggs, or did you do other things?
Other things, yeah. It did a mix of everything.
Right.
So, you know, I'd like I said, make cats talk. I, you know, and it was always like humans interacting with other things that, you know, don't normally come alive, but they did in the videos.
But was it always an inanimate object or something that doesn't talk talking?
No. I mean, well...
He's like, quite often.
Yes, quite often. We'll put, yeah.
Because the eggs really worked.
It totally worked.
Huh.
And it's funny, like, looking back at it now, you know, I think about it, I'm like, oh man, I didn't, you know, I wonder why I didn't just gravitate towards that right away. you know, because it really worked and it just popped and people loved it. And
like, in other words, do a sequel to the eggs.
Yeah, exactly. And I did, actually, probably a year later or something like that. But it was just one of those things, like, I want to do all kinds of things. I want to try things out. I want to make explosions. You know, I want to make giant demon monsters, whatever.
Yeah.
So,
and there was a good 3 years between joining YouTube in 06 to that first Annoying Orange in 09.
Yep.
And so in that 3 year period, of course, you know, if you're talking 06, 07, 08, you're not, no partner program really. There's not a lot of money or any in YouTube. It's still sort of for the hobbyist.
Yep.
So what were you doing to make money in that period of time?
So after I made that talking egg video, you know, I was continuing to do other things. And then all of a sudden, I got an email from jibjab.com. I don't know if you guys know.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Animation site where you could actually interact with the website and upload your photos, and they would make those talk.
Yes.
At some point.
Yep.
And they would also do political satire, music videos that were two-dimensional animations, but they would all have, like, moving mouths.
Yep.
So they saw your egg thing, and they're like, well, we're either going to get this guy on board, or we're going to assassinate him.
Yeah, they called me up, and they're like, hey, we love this, and we want you to come in and make a whole slew of them. And so I went in, talked with them, and that's what happened. I ended up making, I think, like, 10 of them at least, different variations of kind of this egg structure. So, you know, and it was all for different holidays because they were doing this, you know, kind of holiday greeting card, e-card kind of thing. So, you know, for the Super Bowl, a bunch of avocados got turned into guacamole. And for Christmas, a bunch of cranberries got strung up on, you know, a string and hung up on the Christmas tree and stuff like
Executed.
That.
Executed.
Yes. And it was all horrific but funny at the same time, a lot of animated violence. So it played really well, and it did really well for their site. And, you know, I had a lot of fun doing it. And I actually got to, like, work with a legitimate crew, have a cameraman, things like that. So there was a good learning process there, too. And those guys, hands down, some of the best dudes, Evan and Greg over there, they are one of the reasons why I'm at where I'm at. Like, those guys really nurtured me, so.
But you didn't make the orange for them.
Nope, I didn't. Nope.
Thank goodness for that.
yeah, it was shortly after that I had done all those Jib Jab videos. I was still doing my thing. Every once in a while, I'd do a talking food video, and that was really it. It was just going to be, you know, I came up with this idea, you know, I was lying in bed one night and just, you know, because I, you know, before I fall asleep, just come up with ideas. And that just popped into my head, like, oh, would it be hilarious if this, you know, if this apple was annoying this orange and then it got knifed and, you know, and just kind of that escalation of being annoyed to death.
What, did you switch it? Because you just said that. Oh.
Yeah. In the beginning, it was going to be the other way around. But then when I started animating it, I still hadn't, like, really, really perfected the animation process, even though I had done tons of these. So I was, you know, as I was animating, I was like, ah, it looks like the face on the orange looks so much better. I'm going to make it the annoying orange. So I swapped it.
Wow. So it was almost the annoying apple.
Yes, it was almost. But it was good that I didn't go that way because then, you know, orange could say, you're an apple. And, you know, there's that, you know, kind of
well, you know,
that thing going on.
The it's, you know, up to over 150 million views now. It was one of those videos that everybody passed around back then and continues to get a lot of views. Having just watched it today to kind of just to refresh as a refresher on it, I'm just reminded at how much the violence at the end is really the hook. You know, it's like, it's funny throughout. I mean, it's just a hilarious video, that first iteration of the Annoying Orange. You're laughing throughout, and then of course just this unexpected, like, oh, this is going to happen. And that was kind of what, that was sort of the plot line with everything at that point, right?
And it was like, I will add that it was obviously the great ending was this knife, and then slicing an apple is, I think, more satisfying than slicing an orange too. So I think you won on that one. But then it was that the button of, then it pans over to the payer. And that, you got that extra big laugh at the end. It was just perfect. But it set up another one. I don't even know if the second one after that was a pair.
No.
It wasn't, but you kind of get this, oh, now he's going to talk to this pair. What else is this orange going to talk to?
Yep.
I'm going to keep watching. And I could be 5 years old, or I could be 55, I could be 105, and I'm going to watch the next one.
Yep.
Because I'm annoyed by this orange in a very delightful way. Did it blow up instantly?
It took a few weeks, but after a few weeks, it hit a million. And then slowly just started getting more and more millions.
Was there someone who talked about it at that early stage that was like,
no,
helped it blow up? Or was it just everybody?
It was, yeah. I mean, it really was organic. You know, I don't remember anyone ever, you know, talking about it or featuring it or anything like that. It was just, it started to get a lot of traction. And then suddenly I was getting tons of emails from kids saying, make more, you know, we love this. And so I, you know, luckily I left the character alive at the end, so I could make some more, because it was never intended to be more than just one video. So,
But at that point where you're like all in, orange, orange, orange.
No, not even then. It wasn't until the fourth episode that I uploaded, and I was like, holy crap, because it was right before Christmas. I uploaded that video, and the next day it had a million views, which at that time that's gangbusters.
Yeah.
So mm-hmm. I was like, there is something going on here. Mm-hmm. So at the time, I was doing client work and YouTube at the same time. I was off on vacation for Christmas. I got home. I made an annoying orange YouTube dedicated page. And just decided right then and there, like, hey, this is what I'm doing. I'm gonna try and make this work, because, you know, now's the time.
Right.
So from there, I just, you know, I kind of dedicated myself to, okay, now I'm on a schedule. Every week, I'm going to do another one of these. Because that was kind of the schedule at the time for everybody. It's like, just do a video a week and, you know, get on a schedule. So Friday became the day. So every Friday was a new annoying orange video.
Was it difficult to maintain that schedule? Did you?
Oh, yeah. Because
of the work that went into it, writing, the shooting, the editing, the compositing.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I would not have been able to do it without Spencer. I did the first couple episodes, and then, you know, by the third episode, I was already starting to get stumped a little bit, you know, as far as like coming up with puns.
In terms of writing.
Yeah. So I hit him up because he's the master of puns. It's ridiculous. So,
and then in terms of like the keyboard work, mm-hmm. was that time consuming too? I mean, was it?
Did like the animating, you
yeah.
mean? Yeah, that took so long. I mean, it was, we would, basically the structure became, Spencer and I would talk on Sunday for an hour or two, come up with, okay, what's this next video going to be? He would script it and have the script done usually by Monday. And we'd maybe do some revisions. It'd be very quick revisions. And then, you know, we'd have it locked by Monday night. And then Tuesday would record all the mouths. And then, you know, spend the next 2 days animating it and upload on Friday. And that was the structure for many, 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 many weeks.
That was your life. Yes. Your life for a while.
Yeah. But it was rewarding because it was blowing up and it was working and it was working.
Totally. It was fun. It was so much fun.
After everything you had done, I mean, hearing your story, it had to have been satisfying. Wow, this is really happening.
Yeah. Yeah, it was crazy. And to go on YouTube and see the videos featured everywhere, you know, at the time they would actually feature videos all over the site, and just seeing it featured and, you know, seeing, like, I would upload a video and within, you know, an hour, it would have thousands and thousands and thousands of likes and favorites and, you know, comments and whatever. And people were so engaged and there was no negativity whatsoever. It was crazy, you know, like, you know, Fred was kind of the other annoying character at the time. And I always felt really bad because, you know, go to his videos and look at the comments and they were just nasty. People say some nasty things.
Mm-hmm.
But there really wasn't any of that with Orange. And anytime anybody did say anything bad, the rest of the community would stand up and say, hey, don't you make fun of Orange. He's funny. You know?
Right.
What you thinking?
Usually when you go back to something monstrously successful on YouTube, when you look back at the first one, it's like, oh yeah, that one actually wasn't even that good. You know, that's the thing that I was very pleasantly surprised to rewatch the first one, that it was very much intact. I think a testimony to a process of, well, it wasn't an orange, but you had mastered a lot of other things that everything came together in a way that you never could have imagined or planned.
Right, exactly.
Even that, I mean, if you can't point to any one thing, but it's kind of a confluence of everything.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
The writing, everything.
Mm-hmm.
But it's very cool that even in that first one, it's like, oh, this is a template. This is not something that could be great. It was.
And well, so thank you. you start making these videos every single week, and mm-hmm. you're getting this amazing popularity. And of course, you know, we know part of the rest of the story is moving on and having it adapted into a television show.
Mm-hmm.
But wasn't it before that the beyond, it became bigger than YouTube? I mean, all of a sudden there was merchandising involved, and there was, you know, I can't remember what year it was, but I started seeing annoying orange keychains and then pajamas and then mm-hmm. all this
that merchandise. That was before the television show.
Yeah. It started before then, especially, there was a lot of t-shirts and things like that. But like, I think, oh man, maybe the toys actually were before. The toys were before the TV show too. So yeah, there was a lot that was out there before the TV show.
I felt so cool going into Toys R Us that Christmas, like, I guess that was 3 years ago.
That was so surreal.
And it was like at the cashier, you know, the impulse buy stuff, like mm-hmm. half of it was orange.
Dude,
and I
yeah.
was like, oh yeah, I know that orange.
Now, I'm sure you...
I'm like screaming in Toys R Us, I know that orange! I do know the guy. I think I have his phone number in like my phone. And anybody wants to call him?
I know that mouth.
So you're seeing this thing blow up like this. And I know it's one of those things where you're in conversations with people and you're like, oh yeah, let's do this merchandising thing. And they're all going to make keychains or pajamas or t-shirts or whatever it might be. But how does it feel? Do you remember the first time you saw it on a shelf?
Yes. It was Hot Topic.
Uh-huh.
There was actually a bunch of YouTubers that had gotten stuff in Hot Topic. I don't know, were you guys in there too?
We were not part of that wave. No.
Okay. Like Shane Dawson was one of them. Yeah. I think Charlie the Unicorn. There was a bunch of people. So it was cool to actually go there and not just see my stuff, but a whole wall of YouTubers. It was at that point where I was like, ah, that makes me proud right there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Those are my boys.
And then it gets on television, but it's a different iteration. I mean, mm-hmm. is there, what's the perspective on, okay, this is what you did here and it worked here, but mm-hmm. for this to be a television show, it does have to be something different.
Well, yeah, that was always, I mean, everyone always came to us and they were like, you know, when we'd go and pitch and stuff and talk about it, everyone would always say like, how do you translate 2 minute video online to, you know, a TV show?
Mm-hmm.
Well, you do that by concentrating on the characters and character development and, you know, going on adventures. It's not, you go from just this witty dialogue, quick things that happen, and then, you know, the knife moment, whatever, because that's what the web show was, to now, hey, we can actually explore all of these personalities and how they work together and, you know, that kind of thing. And that was actually the most fun part of the TV show, is doing that kind of thing, you know, really diving into those personalities and, you know, finding out that Marshmallow is this cute character that loves everything, but kind of has a dark side that comes out every once in a while. You know, you really get to play with those sorts of things a lot more.
And then you had the opportunity to work with some pretty amazing veterans in the animation business when you started developing the show.
Yeah, it was, I mean, you know, with development, you know, Tom Shepard came in and he had worked on so many things like Pinky and the Brain, uh-huh. One of my favorite cartoons. So, you know, having guys like him come on and then Conrad Vernon of Madagascar fame, a bunch of other stuff too. Working with those guys, it was amazing. And then, you know, having a whole studio filled with people just working on putting faces on fruit was very, very surreal and a lot of fun.
And you've had 2 seasons up to this point.
Yep.
And that went really well. I mean, what was the experience for you?
Amazing.
Was it a great experience?
It was beyond amazing. I mean, at the time, it sucks because at the time I was so busy, you know, because we were trying to do the web show at the same time. Because my whole philosophy was, you know, going into it, which was also kind of hard to get across to a lot of people was like, you can't cut off the web show because the web show is where it was all born. That's where the audience is now. You got to use that to push the audience to this new bigger thing, you know, and they cross promote each other and they work together.
Just like two strains of corn. You know, you're still doing the same thing after all these years.
They pollinate each other. Yep, exactly.
but you were working yourself like crazy because you had to do both.
Yeah,
you had to keep the web series going every week.
Yep, exactly. So it was constantly running back and forth from that to the web show and then back and forth and back and forth. So it was hard to like really sit down and, you know, take it all in and really enjoy it.
Yeah.
But, you know, I say that, but I'm not saying that I didn't enjoy it because I really, really did. But, it, you know, at the time, looking back, I'm like, gosh, I wish I would have just sat around more and just, you know, took it all in a little bit. But
what's your focus at this point? I know that on the Orange channel, you've got your own channel, mm-hmm. the Danebo channel, there's things happening there. But, mm-hmm. and then even within the Orange channel on YouTube, there is... seems to be a lot of different things that are happening there. So what's the strategy and what's your focus? Be it television, Danebo, Orange, or the Orange series or other things on the Orange channel?
It's all of those things, actually. We're continuing to do stuff on the Danebo channel here and there. We've got, you know, we're always doing stuff on the Annoying Orange channel every Friday still. And now we do stuff every Monday. It's usually like gameplay videos because obviously everyone loves gameplay on YouTube. And then Wednesday we've kind of held for new IP. You know, we did our first new show about a half year back called The Misfortune of Me Being Ned, excuse me. And it was an animated show, cartoon. It was a lot of fun to do, and it kind of taught me the whole process of making a cartoon, and it is a much more daunting task than I ever would have thought. So, but yeah, kind of just exploring and experimenting with, you know, the whole medium, because really it used to be you uploaded once a week, and that was kind of the model, but now it's become much more normal for people to upload, you know, multiple times a week, if not multiple times a day. It's kind of what the algorithm is geared towards. So we're just kind of playing with that.
I mean, and with having 5 years of Orange, that's what you said, right? There's 5 years of Orange under your belt.
Yep.
I would imagine there's a challenge to keeping it relevant, keeping it top of mind. I mean, you can't expect to do the same thing and get the same results,
exactly,
right?
Exactly.
So how does that work? I mean, is it frustrating? Views aren't the same that they used to be in one sense.
No. And it's tough because you don't want to go down that road where you're just a slave to the views, but it's so hard not to be. You know, because when it starts getting down that road, you start enjoying it a lot less and you start worrying, okay, like, I worked so hard on this video, but it didn't make its money back. And so now what am I going to do? And, you know, so... It's tough in that way, but you know, ultimately we try and do something new with every single episode, whether it's a 3D shot or, you know, something that we haven't tried before, just to keep it fresh, and then always, you know, trying to bring new people on, like you guys, mm-hmm. and, you know, new people that are getting popular on YouTube. I still find it amazing. We had Chester C come in a while ago, and he came in and he was, you know, he's been blowing up. And so I was worried that he wouldn't even want to be on the show, like, you know, our dinky show, whatever. But he came in, he's like, are you kidding me, man? I totally want to be on this show. It's like, you know, it's a rite of passage. It's a YouTube rite of passage. You got to be killed. I'm continually amazed by the YouTube culture and, you know, everybody working together still. You know, it's a good thing to fall back on, especially when you get frustrated. You know, it's a big family, and that's a very comforting thing.
Well, we're glad to now be considered part of the ranks, the dead ranks, and to hang out with you and hear your story. It was a lot of fun. Thanks for coming in.
Yeah, thank you guys.
And now we're gonna kill you.
Oh gosh,
knife!
I'm gonna do it. I'm gonna do what you told me to do. I was sitting there in the booth, and you were like, "Okay, now just yell."
ah!
And I was like, oh, this is it. I'm dying now. Yeah. So I just encourage you to yell like you're dying.
Okay, here we go.
A little Tarzan in there.
Yeah, that was excellent.
Thank you. That's good. Cut. Sign the table, sir.
And there it was, our conversation with Dane Bodekheimer.
I really had a good time talking with Dane. I think that there's this dynamic when we talk to someone on an Ear Biscuit that's of similar age to us, that's found a way to be successful on YouTube. There's a similar path because there was many years of development before YouTube came about where you were making videos. I mean, if you track with us, it's the whole editing videos on two VCRs as a kid, yeah, and finding a way, even in the college years, to make videos and find an outlet, still before YouTube was invented.
Well, and one of the interesting phenomenons when that's your story is that you have something that you made that no one knows about unless you tell them about it. Like, for him, it's Demon Shadow. You know, for us, it's Gutless Wonders.
Yeah.
You have that thing that you began or you made that you showed to family members that you don't want the internet to see. Although Dane did say he was possibly willing to put it on the internet at some point. I'd like to see Demon Shadow.
Yeah. And he got married before the whole YouTube thing happened.
Not true. He met his wife.
He
met his wife, who is now his wife. But yeah, he's been.
But they were a long time couple kind of thing.
Yeah. So it's just a different thing
than what you see today with YouTube. It's these kids who, you know, I don't know. They don't know who they're dating next or what they're doing or what video's coming out. It's just a different dynamic.
And there's nothing wrong with that. It's just, it's good to connect with somebody who's got sort of a similar background.
But not old. We're not old.
Oh, no.
No, yes, no. Yeah. It's not, I'm not saying that.
50 is the new 30.
The sad thing is there's somebody who just said, whoa, Rentlinker 50? What?
It won't be too long, brother.
Tweet at Dane Bo, not Dan Bo. I accidentally left the first E out, and it's just some other dude. I don't know who it is. It's somebody. But
well, you know what? You should tweet at Dan Bo and say, "What? And dude, come on now. It's too close to Dane Bo."
But not really. Tweet at Dane Bo and let him know what you thought of his Ear Biscuit. We certainly appreciate the time that we spent together. We also appreciate you reviewing Ear Biscuits on iTunes, so give it some ratings. Also, comment on SoundCloud. We appreciate all of this as a way to support Ear Biscuits.
And mostly, we just appreciate your ears ingesting our Ear Biscuits.
That's true.
So just bring your ears back next week, and we'll bring the biscuits. It's a beautiful arrangement.
We promise.